Good morning, and thanks for coming to our panel. As Hani said at the beginning, I'm Makini Chisholm-Straker. I'm an emergency medicine physician in New York City. I have been working at the intersection of healthcare and human trafficking for about 10 years. Today, I'm going to specifically be talking about the experiences of people who are being labor trafficked while they're being trafficked, their experiences with healthcare providers. Firstly, I have no financial disclosures. My salary is paid by Columbia University Medical Center, and I'll try harder. So the three things that everyone here should leave today with. One, I want everyone to be able to name the three providers that are most likely to encounter someone being labor trafficked. We should all be able to describe the types of trauma outside of the exploitation itself that labor victims are experiencing, and that you can name at least one resource that you should access while you're seeing a patient or a client who's being labor trafficked. So those are hopefully three concrete things that we should all be able to do, or at least refer to your notes when it happens. Actually, I do want to mention it's really important to talk about labor trafficking because all trafficking is bad, right? I mean, that's sort of easy. But in the past 5 to 10 years, human trafficking has sort of come into the mainstream limelight, but mostly that's commercial sex trafficking and trafficking of children. And we should all be able to get behind that that's evil, right? But labor trafficking is a huge part of human trafficking. And domestically, if we think about it, in the United States, that actually makes a lot of sense. It's the bedrock of this nation is slavery and exploitation. It's what we were founded on. It's what has built this nation, and it has never gone away. We called it now human trafficking. We have a new name for it, but it's always existed here. Importantly, though, the principles that underpin this nation that could make us great are the reasons that we should be better. And so we're going to be better. I think the people in this room probably agree with that. So there are multiple types of human trafficking. Susie alluded to quite a few of them. Factory work is one way that someone might be trafficked. If you think about the material needs and desires of this nation and our desire to pay for things cheaply, it sort of makes sense why you can buy some things really cheaply. That's because someone's not making a living wage. Similarly, the luxuries sort of that we all like to partake in, and this, again, doesn't mean that everyone who does your nails is being trafficked, because I do like to go to my nail salon, but you do have to ask yourself, why is it only $5? How much is, I mean, you're not going to tip them then $30, right? So they're also not making a living wage, potentially. The commercial and tourism and business industries feed hotels, and if you think about hotel housekeeping, there is a list. I think that EFCAT actually puts out a list of hotel industries that have said, you know, we're taking a stand against trafficking. Not every hotel is on that list. We'll just leave it at that. The agriculture industry in the United States can potentially be participating in human trafficking, particularly in the South, if you think about your produce and where that comes from, potentially. And then construction and renovation of our cities and suburbs. There are a number of other types of human trafficking that include manual labor, but all of these people are hiding in plain sight. They're sometimes hiding because they need to in order to not be assaulted, killed, or their family members assaulted and killed by the traffickers, but we see them every day. Part of it is that we aren't always aware that we're seeing it. The general public is, frankly, quite surprised. Now that they've heard of human trafficking, again, they think it's people who are prostitutes, quote-unquote. They think it's about sex and about children being trafficked. They don't necessarily think that it's the person that is pushing the cement in the middle of the street. So as every one of us has talked about so far, human trafficking in the wrong situation can happen to anyone without enough social capital. Lady Liberty has said, give me your tired, your poor, your hungry masses yearning to breathe free, and that's everyone in this room, right? It doesn't matter where you were born, what language you speak, or your identification or documentation status. So that's something to keep in mind, that if I went to Afghanistan, I don't really have a ton of social capital. I don't know anybody there. So it's important to keep that in mind. So the reason that I did sort of my study was that there isn't a ton of evidence out there about people being trafficked in the active moment. So we have a decent amount of literature, arguably, about provision of services and the healthcare needs of people who are survivors, who are out of their situation. To be clear, victims are survivors every day. But for this, we're going to say victims while they're in and survivors while they're out. So there's a little bit of literature there, and there are some small qualitative studies about the supporting the anecdote of expert survivors and advocates who tell us that people are presenting while they're being trafficked. So I wanted to add to that body of knowledge in a quantitative way. And that was the point of this survey. So it was a national anonymous retrospective study of survivors of trafficking of all types. And we recruited through survivor blog, Facebook, word of mouth, and most importantly, anti-trafficking advocacy organizations to try to pull people from lots of different places. So we're going to focus on those survivors of labor. And it's important, while this is the largest study of its kind, these numbers are still small. And as Susie pointed out, we don't identify most people who are being trafficked. And so if you think about the bias of this study, right, it was a written study. It was available in multiple languages, but it's a written study, so it's already biased there. And then most folks were recruited through these anti-trafficking organizations, so you had to be hooked in. How many people aren't hooked in? Actually, most labor survivors aren't hooked in. Most people were trafficked within the United States, and that's what we're focusing on. Of those, half of them were labor survivors. And we're not talking about these people. A third of them, almost, were born in the U.S., and a little more than half were male. So all of these stereotypes about what it looks like to be labor trafficked, just set them down, and let's move forward. This data is still new, right, but it's corroborated by a 2012 study by Northeastern University and Urban Institute, who were funded by the National Institute of Justice, who found the same thing. I'm not discovering anything new, I'm just sort of validating it. In our study, 74% of people who were labor trafficked wanted to see a healthcare provider, and 64% of them were able to. So we're seeing them. What are we doing about it? So we wanted to describe the kinds of trafficking that providers were seeing. In regards to labor, we're seeing domestic service, so housemaids and the like, childcare and nanny workers, factory labor, restaurant workers, hotel housekeeping and construction were some of the big ones. And importantly, people could be trafficked in multiple areas. So in one or two simultaneously, in series, what have you. Similarly, they could see healthcare providers, and it could be more than one that they've seen, right? So the top three were emergency medicine practitioners, primary care providers, and dentists. I didn't see that one coming, but that's what happened. So obviously we need more data to validate this, but something to consider is that we're seeing them in large numbers, and this is who's seeing them. The first one I think we all probably expected. The kinds of ailments that people report experiencing are self-diagnosed depression, headache and back pain, and then a host of other things. Importantly, these are not clinical presentations. This is not someone showing up into my ED saying, I have a headache. And thank God, because that's not very helpful, right? That's not very screening. I can't screen with that because everybody in my ED has a headache. If they didn't already, they got one while waiting. So these are just things that people say they've experienced while being trafficked. We need to have more literature there, right, about what do people show up with. Because it's on your differential when you see a two-month-old with a spiral fracture, right? Child maltreatment, you just go there. What should we go there for human trafficking? That list may be remarkably expansive, and so it might not be a worthwhile list, but it's worth investigating. And then what are the kinds of things that people are experiencing while they're being trafficked? 73% experienced some combination of being choked, hit, punched, kicked, their hair pulled or pushed, and about a third actually also experienced sexual assault while being trafficked. And 30% also, either in series or simultaneously, experienced sexual trafficking. So the two are not mutually exclusive. Having one does not preclude you from experiencing the other. About half of our patients saw a provider alone, so that's the perfect opportunity, right, to find out that someone is being trafficked. And yet, a third of them actually talked with the provider about their situation, that were identified as being trafficked. And so these screening questions, they were asked what sort of we have as the best expert advice about what you should ask someone at least once. 56% of them were asked at least one of these questions. And so we have to figure out either what the right combination of question is, which question is it, or is it another question entirely, to find out who our labor survivors are. On the upside, almost 80%, if we found out they were being trafficked, we offered them referrals. So obviously providers want to do something. The question is, how do they identify this population so that they can do something? Okay. So we sort of addressed the first two issues, right? We need to name the three provider types that are encountering this patient population. That's emergency medicine practitioners, So that includes PAs, NPs, RNs, like anybody in healthcare, primary care providers, and dentists. The other types, I just really didn't see it coming, which is the point of research, right? Because you think you see something coming and you just go wrong. So the other types of trauma that labor survivors are encountering are physical, sexual assault, and sex trafficking. They're experiencing all three of those. And our resources. If you leave with nothing else today, outside of knowing that anyone can be trafficked, 1-888-3737-888. It's available 24/7. It's the national U.S. tip line. If you think someone's being trafficked, you call. If you know they're being trafficked, you definitely can call. And they can actually give you resources. This is a few other websites that you can access for information more about human trafficking, about that intersection of healthcare and human trafficking, and about local anti-trafficking organizations in your area, because I do not know about Oklahoma or Washington State or Maine. I just know New York. That's where I'm from. Again, it does not, human trafficking doesn't care what language you speak. It doesn't care about your gender identity, your sexual orientation. It doesn't care about your race or ethnicity. There are people who are potentially more likely to be trafficked in certain types of trafficking, right? But again, given the wrong circumstances, anyone is at risk. And labor trafficking doesn't get talked about enough. I need to thank my co-investigators, Dr. Lynn Richardson, Dr. Susie Baldwin, Bertil Gadbe-Tobe, Neka Ndukwe, and Pauline Johnson, and we were funded by the Mount Sinai Medical Center in New York City. If you have questions, comments, if you want to work on a study together, I love research. If we don't get a chance to meet today or talk tomorrow, please email me.